Welcome to Win with Richardson & Richardson. What's important now? Success in business most often comes down to hard work, not by silver bullets and quick fixes. It's knowing where to focus that hard work that's key to winning. Join sales prospecting expert and three-time seven-figure business founder Carrie Richardson and managing partner of R&R Consulting and former owner of Doberman Technologies, Ian Richardson, for radical honesty regarding strategic planning, accountability, and execution that will get you the systematic results you're working toward. Let's get into today's episode. Thought leader and your host, Carrie Richardson.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Carrie Richardson. I am a partner at Richardson & Richardson, and I am the host of Win Today. With me today is Jim Smith from Proper Sky in Philadelphia. Jim, how are you doing today?
Fantastic. Thanks so much for the invitation today, Carrie.
Oh, it's a pleasure. How's the weather in Philadelphia today?
It was cold this morning, but it's nice today. The sun's warming things up, so looking forward to getting out there and walking around a bit.
Glad to hear it. We had a little bit of a cold front punch us in the face in Michigan, and it's supposed to get nice again by the weekend. Tell me a little bit about Proper Sky and how you got involved in becoming an entrepreneur.
I was always involved in entrepreneurial endeavors. I studied entrepreneurial studies at Drexel University, and I started a little startup when I was 19, like a remote pharmacy was the concept, which is pretty cool. I worked my way through school, so full-time school, full-time work, part-time school. And in 2003, I decided that I wanted to go see the world. So I quit my job, sold everything, joined the Peace Corps. I lived overseas in the South Pacific for 2 years. And I thought I'd take a break from system administration, and they put me in charge of the largest technical college in the entire country. So I went from having a medium budget in a small company to no budget with a huge bunch of kids to take care of. And I loved it. I really enjoyed teaching. I enjoyed educating students. And I loved like making things work on a shoestring budget. And so all these other little organizations found out about me. People would invite me over and say, hey, I got this small business server in my office that's busted. And I can't get on the internet, like helping out all these NGOs. And when I came back to the United States, I was like, well, I'm going to start my own company. So I did. I wrote a script, a Perl script that would read Craigslist, and it would text me, which was the new hotness at the time. And it would text me when somebody had the word like Linux or server or anything like that in a computer post. And I made three phone calls, about five. Three of those guys are still customers to this day. One of them ended up becoming a dermatology practice that grew from four providers in four offices to 70 providers in 60 offices across 13 states. We built their whole data center and grew up on the backs of those guys. So that's how I got into the MSP game, so to speak.
Now, is that the customer that you mentioned when we were in the green room that made up 90% of your revenue for a while?
It is. So it was anything for a buck, right? We picked up a bunch of small doctors along the way, but we were just charging time and materials. But we had one major provider that we were focused on up until 2014. Two owners had a falling out, ended up suing each other into bankruptcy. And the practice fell apart. 2014, 2015 was the longest, most stressful period of my entire life, I think. It sucked. We went from, I think I had 11 or 12 employees at the time, down to four. And I think I had about just enough money to buy gas in the bank account by the time things pivoted and switched around again.
Those are hard conversations to have, especially when your employees haven't done anything wrong.
That is by far the thing I promised myself moving forward. There's nothing worse than laying off good people that actually are doing the work, right? It's one thing to have a conversation with an employee that's not performing. You've given them a chance to develop or change. It's something else entirely when you have to let go of good people. And I think that was the hardest, by far the hardest thing about 2015 for me, in my life, honestly, one of the biggest things I've ever had to deal with.
And you mentioned that at that time you went to IT Nation and you developed a relationship with a coach?
Sort of, yeah. I mean, I was sitting by the bar drinking a bourbon, and I sat next to this guy, Steve. He wasn't necessarily a coach per se, but we were just shooting the breeze. And I told him my story and why I was at IT Nation. I said, look, I got to find a new way to do business. I'm struggling. I don't really know what to do. And he made an introduction and he wrote this name on the back of a business card. And he said, call this guy when you get back to Philadelphia. Call me up if you have any problems. And this guy's going to teach you how to run an MSP. That's what I did.
A lot of times people don't bring in external help, advice, coaches, consultants until it's almost too late.
Emotionally, it was the longest, most draining period of my entire life, right? And I was just so overwhelmed. One of the other things I was doing during that time is I joined the Goldman Sachs 10,000 Small Businesses program.
Hey!
Yeah, 10KSB grad. I thought you were 10KSB
grad. Me too.
Yeah. Cohort 8, right?
Whoa, cohort 8. I was like 24.
So while we were in there, that was actually really fantastic. And one of the things I took away from that is you don't know what you don't know, right? Adam Grant showed up to one of our classes. He was a UPenn guy. Maury Tappenhorn, who did this negotiations class, which was fantastic.
She's still teaching that.
He is fantastic. I love all of her content. And so it taught me that it is much better to pay for good advice than it is to do it yourself. In a lot of circumstances. So it was a huge growing up thing. And that's what made me do it. I just like, look, this guy's run a successful MSP. He's obviously exited. He started this different company. Let me just take his advice. He already knows what he's doing. What have I got to lose?
So what was the biggest thing that you learned at that time? And how long did it take you to pivot and implement those suggestions?
The biggest thing I learned during that time was meditation. It sounds like a silly thing, but I had a hard time falling asleep. I didn't want to take any medication. And I learned to let the anxiety thrive and then push it out and deal with it as it came in these sorts of waves. And it really taught me self-control, I think, actually is a big thing. I come from an Irish heritage, lots of stereotypes there about emotions and things like that. And I think once I understood that this too shall pass, right? It's just a temporary feeling. It helped me logically address like, okay, if I really want to be successful, what do I need to do? What are the things that I'm missing? What do I execute well at? What am I missing? And connected with the people that I thought could help me get there, right?
Tell me about hiring your first team members.
So my first team member was my best friend. We grew up together in Southwest Philadelphia, and he was working in a retail shop at the time, and he was looking for something new, and I had all the time in the world. And I said, look, man, I'm driving around all these doctor's offices. I can't keep doing this. I need somebody that can get a car. And so I hired him, and he's been with me. He just left last year. He got a job with the government. He's got a nice pension and 8 weeks vacation, but he's with me for 15 years, and we had a great relationship. So he was my first employee. I taught him, and then I found my, whatever Michael Gerber calls that guy, the guy that can do everything, this guy named Jeff. And he really helped propel us to the next level. And then we just picked up just a bunch of different people along the way. No, it's definitely not as defined or scoped as it is now when I first started. I think just getting anybody that would come into my office and decide to work there was a win. But I think, you know, you learn a lot about people and characters and personality and that sort of stuff. It was a pirate ship of IT, I think, is probably the best way to describe my first few years. But it worked. We got it working. So,
well, we talked a little bit about that earlier. The things that get you to your first million aren't going to get you to your fifth. So yes. You can run like a pirate ship or a clubhouse or whatever you want to describe that as up until a certain point. And then you realize that you're doing a lot more work for the same amount of money. And that's usually where I see entrepreneurs making choices to do something different. Like they maybe it takes them a couple of years of flatlining or, you know, their margins dropping. And then all of a sudden they're open to the idea that life could be different. Business could be different. I think you had almost a blessing as much as losing that amount of revenue overnight is terrible. You learned early in your business career what happens when you make choices like that, right? Most of us are like, whatever, it's going to pay my bills. I'll take that business. But knowing what I know now, I would never take a client that would end up being 50% of my revenue. Now, that's not true. I'd probably take that client.
Yeah.
Because I'm terrible at saying no. But then I would have to scramble to try and find other clients so that I'd be diversified a little bit. And I wouldn't have known that earlier. So you got this kind of great gift handed to you early on in business. If you look at your business now, if all of a sudden 90% of your book dropped, that's a much different experience. And who knows if you're going to have the energy to replace that revenue 20 years into the game.
Exactly. So yeah, I'll tell you a funny story. I did have another customer that made up almost 40% of my revenue, right? And so this happened I picked them up in 2016, 2017. And they grew. They weren't originally that big, but they grew to about a 350 employee company. We managed all their IT. It was fantastic. CEO changed ships. And I was like, I saw the writing on the wall. And I was like, okay, this time though, I had money in the bank. I had cash flow. And I was like, okay, if you want to sell today, hire a sales guy a year ago. So that's the first thing I did. I was like, okay, let's start finding a salesperson. Let's diversify, because I saw the ship slowly sinking, and it was just a totally different experience. I slept through the entire thing. I didn't have to let anybody go. I had plenty of gas in the tank, and it was just like, let's overcome and get better at it.
And is that salesperson still with you today?
He is. He's been crushing it, which is great. He reached out to me through the web form, and I was like, oh man, out of work sales guys, I don't know. And I called around because Philly's a pretty good town, and I talked to a couple of people. They're like, yeah man, he'll do it. Get him in there, give him a try. And he's been crushing it since, so he's done a really good job.
That's nice to hear. I think sometimes we hire sales reps hoping that they'll be able to build a process for us if we don't understand it well. You hired a sales rep. You were the sales rep prior to that. How were you able to transfer your institutional knowledge or the things that you knew instinctively about going on a sales meeting to that sales rep?
It's something that I'm still learning. So there's a couple of things that you mentioned that I think are very true. Salespeople are built differently. If you're expecting your sales guy to come in with a process, you are gravely mistaken, right? They're connectors of people. They enjoy talking and not necessarily putting in activities and notes and all those other sorts of things that I think drive process. What I did is I invested probably a year putting together a really solid managed services template. I got a bunch of pieces from the guys over in my Evolve group, and I put together this beautiful template. And then I would have Anthony go ahead and go through and schedule out all the pieces. Okay, how many workstations, how many servers, how many users, how many licenses? And he would inevitably get it wrong. And so what we started doing is we started building flashcards. We started doing training. I started having him like just basically quote every little thing until he could answer and understand what was going on. And now it's not necessarily what are we selling or what are the bits and widgets, but now we spend more time, okay, what is the customer's hang up? They don't want to spend $1,500 a laptop. They want to spend $900 a laptop. Why does that not make sense for an engineering firm? So how do I rebuke this sort of stuff? And so I guess coaching is probably the answer. And the other thing is, I think as an entrepreneur, one of the things I still am bad at this is, but I'm better than I was. You get your fingers in everything, right? Gary Pika says, I can order a pizza better than anyone, which is true, right? Like every entrepreneur sort of feels that way. And I think the thing is, Anthony really opened up my eyes. We had tons of leads coming in from our marketing system. I just didn't have the time to pursue them, right? And so when I freed myself up and I let the vine go and trained him to get improved, we really made some traction and really grew.
So that sounds like the best sales hire you've made. Tell me about the best technical hire that you've made.
The best technical hire that I made, that's a good question. There's going to be twofold. I've got one guy with me, Colin, who was a double master's degree from Drexel University. He's been with me 13 years, 12 years, something like that. He is what I would call an engineer's engineer. He's just one of those dudes that can intuitively study a problem and solve it if given enough time and resources, right? So that's my first hire. The second best technical hire I've hired was my service manager, Cliff. He joined us just 2 or 3 years ago at this point. I forget exactly because I'm getting old. And what he brought with him was SOP process and standardization, which I'd never really respected, but have a huge and tremendous respect for now. He taught me the error of my ways. And so those were definitely my two best technical hires.
Excellent. You've reached kind of an elite spot in your business. We have a database of about 44,000 managed service providers. Do you want to guess how many of them have reached over $2 million in annual recurring revenue?
My service leadership hat, let's see, top quartile, I don't know, let's say 8,000.
Yeah, it's actually pretty close. So you crossed that threshold. So what do you see as the biggest opportunity for your business in the next 5 years?
I think we're going to see AI profoundly impact our industry. I think we're going to start to see the weaponization of AI from both an attack perspective and a defensive perspective. I believe there's going to be this repivot to humanizing technology and helping organizations prepare for disaster that's inevitable, and less about the sort of prevention and best practices. Once you put the smartest computers in the world looking at source code, it's going to be pretty hard to stop a lot of what I think we're going to see. in the coming future. And I think there's going to be a lot more value in helping organizations recover and be emotionally ready for the onslaught of what we're going to see in the next decade, coming decades.
So for companies that are listening today who aren't technical, what does that look like for a small law firm or a hotel or an engineering firm?
Yeah, so we did an incident response, our first incident response about a year ago for a local company. And I remember walking in, right? So I'm a business owner. And I saw the look in the owner's face. She had 55 employees and they were toast. They were absolutely toast. I was talking to the system administrator and it was obvious this guy didn't know what he was doing and that they were really in a bad spot. All the backups had been destroyed and all this other sort of stuff was happening. And that is what IT becomes, right? That's what ransomware is. It's not this like technical botnet stuff that you see on LinkedIn. Really what it is, it's tears in the eyes of the CEO that knows she has to make payroll and everything that they've relied on to make their systems work just doesn't, right? And you need to have stuff in place to prevent that from happening, or even more important, to recover when it does happen, right? And I think that's the big value I've taken away this last year.
I think the numbers I heard, and this was from Goldman Sachs just a couple of years ago when I finished my program, was that 80% of small businesses don't believe that a cyber incident will happen to them. And of the 20% that do, 50% of that 20% don't think it's going to be that big of a deal.
Yeah, I've got some people that they could talk to that'll tell them otherwise, right?
We don't want to sell with fear, uncertainty, and doubt. And we can't be too technical because then people don't understand what we're saying. But how do you impart the importance of cybersecurity to someone who like just truly believes that their small business is immune or irrelevant?
It really is tough because I don't like selling fear, right? It's such a small thing that you could do that's going to have such a profound impact of keeping your business running. I'm here to protect you. Trust me.
How do you impart the importance upon them without, I don't know, I'm having them go home, unplug everything, get underneath their desk and rock back and forth in the fetal position, which is what I want to do every time I come home from a tech conference.
100%, right? So yeah, I feel like there's a lot of chest pounding and beating at those things, but a lot of it's very accurate, right? So it's like anything else, right? You could tell me I need fire insurance, right? And I may never, ever use it, but when the house burns down, goddamn, if I'm not happy that I had it. But I think the organizations that take this seriously are going to be the ones that outperform in the long term, because cybersecurity insurance and cybersecurity risk, it's the one thing that I see businesses using, right? Yeah. And those organizations that don't take heed, they're going to pay the price, and the price is going to outweigh any of the benefits that they could have had if they just done it right the first time. And I think it's sad to say that, but I think that's what's going to happen, especially as we see the weaponization of AI, right? As more and more ways of penetrating networks and getting into things, cleverly crafted phishing emails, everything else proliferates, more and more organizations are going to get owned. And then it's really going to be taken seriously, in my opinion.
I think an average of 1% of a company's annual revenue is spent on IT compared to 8 to 15% on marketing. When you think about the remediation planning and the damage control that's going to eat that marketing budget afterwards, to me, it seems to make sense that people could look at their marketing budget and say, how can we make security a differentiator for our business? Because all things being equal, I can work with any law firm I want, right? You charge $600 an hour and you charge $600 an hour. Now, what if there was some kind of trust mark that shows me that this company is protecting me in a way that this company isn't? Can we start turning security into a marketing issue?
Yeah, a differentiator. Yeah, sure. Absolutely. There's a real good discussion on LinkedIn the other day, or actually I just hopped on one of the threads. How do you vet the quality of your MSP? So how do you know that they're doing the right stuff, right? Is there organizations out there that will give you like a unfiltered, unbiased view of what your potential risks are? And I think there's a huge market and opportunity there for that sort of stuff. And I'd love to see, there's a lot of talk in the industry right now about regulation and government oversight and stuff like that. And obviously there's reasons, you know, why people don't want that, but I like it. I can't tell you how many times we still run in these organizations that say they're MSPs that are just running like garbage, frankly, just garbage. And I can't believe they're charging people money for this stuff. It's shocking. It really is.
The person that cuts my hair had to get a certification stating that they were qualified to cut my hair. And right. We can trust our entire computer networks to somebody who just woke up today and said, going to become an MSP. And then they went on Reddit and asked what RMM they should use.
Exactly.
And to the consumer, unfortunately, they have no way of knowing the difference between Proper Sky, 20 years established, following all best practices, patching stuff, and that guy. Like a flashy website compared side by side, everybody looks the same. How does a consumer choose?
It's true. It's true, especially when you don't understand the nomenclature, right? So that's the other thing, right? You know, and this kind of harkens back to what I was saying about humanizing stuff. I think one of the things I really try to do is I try to explain technical concepts in a non-technical way as often as I can. And I try to leave the stories, right? It may not matter that you have a shared workstation in your office, but it does matter that if I put my cybersecurity tool in there and I break her computer and she loses all the photos of her grandchildren, right? That's stuff that like resonates. And yeah, I don't know how we solve this problem easily without some sort of oversight. Most big businesses do a pretty good job of vetting, but I do agree that at a certain point, we're going to have some quality control standards and some sort of licensure.
Now, are you going to be leading the charge for that, or are you going to be a late adopter?
No, I'm too busy slinging tech, Carrie. So I'll let the regulators tell me what I need to do. Yeah, I've got plenty of flags planted as it is. I don't need another one.
All right. And what do you see as the biggest opportunity? We talked about AI and how that's going to cause a lot of problems through your industry. Mm-hmm. What's going to save it? What's the big exciting thing that you can pursue in the next 5 years?
Can I pursue in the next 5 years? We're all security companies, right? And the sooner MSPs realize that, whether they want to admit it or not, we are all selling security in one way or another. And so obviously the pivot to security, I think, is important. For me, I think as AI increases and we get more and more exposure to it, like all things, there's going to be a counterbalance. There's going to be that human element that really we start to really hone in as a culture on what makes humans and what makes robots, right? And I think tying the human aspects of a ransomware attack and being prepared for that, both from a technical perspective, but also an emotional perspective, right? And being able to combat that piece, I think is the way I look at differentiating our organization in the future.
You're saying that empathy is going to be your key differentiator in the future?
I don't know if it's going to be our key differentiator. I just feel there's so many people selling technical widgets that you forget it's people at the end of the day. And I think it's going to help differentiate Proper Sky anyway, right? I love having honest conversations with business owners and being able to, I don't know, just understanding the pain of running a business.
That owner mentality versus the employee mentality.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Yeah, that's where I see it going anyway. You know, what is art, right? If AI can make abstract art, right? Like, I just don't know. It's such a nebulous concept, right? I just see all these industries evaporating. Like bookkeeping, I see just going away. I see title search going away. Like all these sort of like white collar things that people have perfected as an art and science are just going to kind of get taken away, right? And then what happens to us and our value and worth when the things that we've been doing and have built just change so dramatically? I don't know. It's wild stuff to think about. I don't know.
If I was 10 years younger, I'd just go mow lawns. My shoulders won't let me.
I just paid the electrician. I'm thinking about switching careers, right?
My God, the guy that cleans my fish pond makes $4,000 a day.
Jesus. Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? And he's not worried about standardization of Office 365 e-tenants. He's just cleaning scum, right?
He's like, just taking those fish out in a plastic bag, cleaning everything out, putting them back in.
Maybe that's what I need to do, right? Or a pizza shop. Who knows?
It's time to pivot, Jim. Well, I want to thank you for joining us today and giving us some food for thought about security and how we might need to consider it in the future as MSPs supporting our clients and as end users who are buying managed IT services. Security is going to be at the forefront of everything we do moving forward. And I don't know. I'm not a big AI fan. I'm a late adopter of most things. My phone is just a very big GPS at this point. It doesn't do very much for me. So
that's great. There's always got to be laggards. So yeah, my dad couldn't buy a flip phone and he was pissed. I'm like, but now he texts. And so it's funny. So it's cool. Everything's got its things. So really appreciate you having me on today.
Thank you for being with us today. And until we chat again, keep winning.
You've been listening to Win with Richardson and Richardson. What's important now? We're so glad you've joined us and know you're one step closer to winning big in your business too. We'd love to connect with you outside of the show. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out to connect@rnr.consulting. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast so you'll easily know when new episodes are available. Until next time, you can win, and we're here to help.